the UCR Podcast.
Anytime you get to speak to a legend, it is very often a good day. This is certainly a great day to be able to bring you the conversation with Graham Nash on today's podcast. Graham hit the road just about a week ago to start his 2026 touring season with his solo band, and they've got some great shows on tap, a bunch of solo electric dates. Plus, this summer, they will also share the stage with the legendary Emmylou Harris for some special shows, and there's one night outside of that which brings together a lot of really cool things. Graham Nash and the Avett Brothers at Red Rocks in Colorado. One of those rare instances where the concert venue is the show, but you get all that great music as a bonus. So get out and see Graham Nash live. He is 84 years young as we're talking today. And as he told me during the conversation, he hopes to live to be 100. And I think that we all hope for that as well, so we can continue to hear his classic songs live. You can get tickets for Graham's shows and information on everything that he's got going on at GrahamNash.com. And we get into a lot of different stories and topics here today. It's Matt Wardlaw, and if this is your first time hearing the UCR podcast, follow us wherever you're listening, and I'm challenging you, leave a review of the podcast if you dig what you're hearing. It really does help out a lot. If you need some new tunes, maybe a few CSN albums to replace old ones that you had that are gone, or maybe you just need to get a few that you never had, you can do all of that. Go to store.ultimateclassicrock.com and use the easiest discount code out there anywhere on the internet to save some money. Wardlaw15 will get you 15% off of your order. So make a stack and rock out. Enjoy our conversation with the great Graham Nash. I know folks are looking forward to these shows, man. This band you have together, you guys have been sounding so good. So, it's got to be a treat to be taking these guys back out for another run.
Yep. They're all younger than me, of course. And so I have to bring my A game every night just to keep up. But they love my music and they know my songs. And it's been a very, very good experience.
How did you go about putting this band together?
My friend Todd Caldwell, who's a piano player that I've been working with, since he was the organ player in Crosby, Stills and Nash, Todd put all of those two guys together. And, I'd never met them, and I think 3 weeks before a tour, I didn't want to. Shane Fontaine is a great guitar player, obviously, but I needed something different, and I needed singers. And so Todd said, "Do you trust me?" I said, "Yeah, of course I trust you." He said, "Good. I know two guys that will be just perfect." And boy, was he right.
Kind of along those lines, just when it comes to harmony, I'm set to talk to Peter Frampton fairly soon, and you sing harmonies with Peter on a track from his upcoming record called I'm Sorry, L. Yes. And as I mentioned, that's something you've had a chance to do so often over the years. And I would guess that as a creative person, Graham, you probably never get tired of finding that vocal blend with somebody new, whether it's Peter or whoever it is on a particular day.
I have to be them for a moment. When I'm singing with David and Stephen, I need to be them. I need to be with Peter. I want to make sure that what I add doesn't stick out too much or doesn't get in the way of anything. And it was a pleasure, actually. I've known Peter since he was, 16 years old, and it was a pleasure to sing with him.
That's pretty cool. How did you two first connect back then?
Well, he was in the herd, of course, as you know. He was all over the New Musical Express and Disc and the Melody Maker, which were English music newspapers. And so he was all over that, with the new face, and he was a good-looking kid. And that's how I first found out about him.
You said something pretty important, I think, when it comes to just the idea that whoever you're with, you need to be that person to kind of get in the zone. And that was something I was thinking about getting ready to talk to you, Graham, was just the idea that, like, harmony has been such a big part of what you do, whether it's your solo work or obviously the Hollies or CSN, the various, incarnations that followed. What's kind of the moment? Like, how do you learn to sing harmony? What's kind of the moment that sticks with you where it really kind of locked in how to take that correct approach that you kind of described. I'm sure it took a while to kind of arrive at, here's how I can do this, here's how I can fit in with each situation.
No, it happened when I was 6 years old. Alan Clark and I were in the same classroom, and we were obviously at school singing the Lord's Prayer, the beginning of every day kind of thing. And Alan always took the melody and I always took the harmony. It was just totally natural for me to do that. And that's when it started.
Isn't that pretty cool? Because I think that's a moment for all of us as music fans, that if you're into that kind of thing, you hear that when you first hear voices harmonizing and you just hear how a crowd of people can blend. That's a pretty magical moment that you never get tired of.
No, music is magic, as you well know. I mean, we all have, the song When We First Kissed in the Back of a Car, we all have our favorite song where when you hear it, you go back in time and relive those memories. And we all have those kind of songs.
Years ago, I was listening to a show that you had done with David in Italy in 2005. As songwriters, obviously, songwriters tend to write about your lives. And as you said during that show, sometimes our lives get really, really close to us and we still write about our lives. You were talking about David's Carry Me in that moment. And one of the good things about the time when you started writing songs is, Graham, it doesn't seem like you ever felt inhibited when it came to writing from your soul. And that's obviously where the best songs come from, but it's not always perhaps so easy for some people to open up like that. How long did it take for you to kind of find your space where you feel comfortable writing in that way?
Well, apart from my romantic songs that I write, like Our House Girl of Mine, my wife Amy once told me that Nina Simone had an incredible statement. And Nina Simone said, no matter what kind of artist you are, piano player or a writer or a painter or a sculptor, you must reflect the times in which you live. And I've always thought that was an incredible quote. And that's what I've always tried to do.
I was listening to the most recent album that you've done, which is Now, which came out for folks that aren't aware in 2023 and Like This Path Tonight and the other records that you've done. Graham, I always appreciate when we get a new batch of songs, whatever is on the album cover. But hearing songs like Golden Idols from the record and thinking about the current status of the world, like it's not hard to imagine that you've probably been perhaps writing songs with some of this stuff that's going on. Have you been writing?
Of course. We must, like Nina says, we must reflect the times in which we live. And these times are incredibly chaotic. I'm going to take part in the No Kings movement tomorrow in New York City. I can't believe that the people that voted Trump in for the second time, I think that they were thinking more about the price of eggs and not what he's doing right now, which is becoming a dictator. And he's I believe a pedophile. I believe that, he's got, 34 felony counts against him. And yet he's still the president of the United States. It's mind blowing to me.
How much is that part of what keeps you out on the road? Because you have all these songs, whether it's Military Madness to name one, Immigration Man, these are songs that remain unfortunately relevant today. And in the more than 60 years that you've been doing this, that's one thing that hasn't changed. And you still hear that on the new record and so on. You're still using your voice and your songs to speak out. I'm sure that you would appreciate if you had to do that just a little bit less, but it's like, unfortunately, you still have these songs that are so relevant that it's, relevant to kind of keep those thoughts in the mind of the people you're singing these songs to.
Indeed. It's both an honor that my music has lasted so long, and it's a pain in the ass, too, that we haven't learned from history. And we haven't. And songs like, Chicago, We Can Change the World, and, Military Madness and Immigration Man, still, even Teach Your Children, still incredibly relevant, even today, 60 years later. Mind-blowing, really.
Well, you've got a few tour dates, quite a few tour dates actually kicking off here in the next week, including this summer, a few with Emmy Lou Harris. You two did some shows last summer as well. That is such a cool pairing, Graham. I'm sure you were pretty jazzed about that, however that opportunity landed on the table.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to work with Emmy Lou. You know, she is in her own right a superstar, you know, and her music with her band is much gentler than mine. And when it's followed by my set, you know, or preceded by my set, whichever one we figure it out, it's a great combination. And I'm really looking forward to doing another three shows with her.
It seems like you two have some fun with the collaborative element. I know that at one point you two ended up singing Neil's Birds together last year, which is super cool. Just that the opportunity to do stuff like that. How'd you guys land on doing Birds together?
Birds is another perfect example of what we were talking about earlier in terms of me wanting to be part of somebody. And I, on that particular track that Neil and I cut, there was no rehearsal. You know, I loved the song. I love Neil, you know, and it just happened that way. And when Emmy Lou wanted to do Birds, I was all over it. Absolutely. Why not?
What's kind of a favorite Neil memory that sticks with you?
Well, you know, he's an incredible musician, obviously, and he follows the muse of music, you know, and sometimes it's great. And sometimes, in my opinion, it's not so great. When you set up a tour for Europe, you know, and you book all the crew members and all the band members, and then you cancel it, you know, within 3 weeks of going out, that disturbs a lot of people's lives, you know, because at that point most tours have been set, and it's hard to get a job, you know. So but one of the things I remember most about Neil was when I was having breakfast with him. I mean, when David and Stephen wanted Neil to join, you know, I said, wait a second. I've never met this guy. I don't know whether I can be his friend, and I don't know whether I can tell him secrets. I have to meet this guy. And so one morning at breakfast on Bleecker Street here in Manhattan, at the end of the breakfast, I looked at Neil and I said, why should we ask you to join this band? And he looked at me right in the eye and he said, you ever heard me and Stephen play guitar together, man? And I said, yes, I have. Okay.
I think you've probably played Red Rocks a few times, but it's cool that you're doing that this summer with the Avett Brothers. How do you know those guys?
I don't. I don't really know them. I've listened to their music, of course. And when they wanted me to open up the show at Red Rocks, I thought, why not? I love that place. It's a great place to play. And so, yes, I'm open for anything that's fun.
I think that's kind of been kind of key to what you've always done, whether it's writing songs or, you know, even photography. Like your legendary photography is just like, you're always searching for that next thing. You're always open to that next thing. And I think that's such an important part of creativity, isn't it?
Absolutely. I'm working on a second book now of over 100 new images. And I love photography. My father was the first person to ever turn me on to the magic of photography when I was about 10 years old. And in my book that I did put out called A Life in Focus, the portrait of my mother I took when I was 11.
Stuff like that's so special. What is kind of the angle of this new book?
Well, I know what I don't take pictures of. I don't take pictures of sunsets. I don't take pictures of to match my couch. I don't take pictures of kittens with balls of wool. I only look for supremely abstract, surreal moments that happen in my life. And they happen a lot. I put myself, when I walk out in the morning, I say, life, I know you've got something incredible to show me. Let's go. And I start my day like that.
That's so cool. What else have you kind of been working on? I mean, certainly a project like that consumes a lot, but what else has kind of been cooking?
Several things. Bob Zemeckis, who did Forrest Gump, of course, is doing a doc on CSN, which comes out later in this year. And Joel Bernstein, my dear friend, who's not only a great photographer himself, but a guitar tech for Bob Dylan, for Prince, for Neil, for Joni. He and I have found about 33 songs of CSN that have not been heard before. And so we're trying to put that record together as we speak so that it comes out with the movie. And also, I'm working on what you said about me and David singing with other people. There's 24 pieces of music that we sang with other people, like, you know, Mexico with James Taylor, Love the One You're with Stephen, and it ends up with Carole King live with me and David singing You Got a Friend. I'm putting that album together, too.
Would some of the stuff with David Gilmour be on there?
Yes, I think so. I think cool. on an Island was really a nice piece of music that David and I helped.
It was really something. I think I think the first time I heard something from that record was you and David singing with Gilmour on The Tonight Show, doing that title track, On an Island. Just so striking, you guys being with him. Just an amazing thing to watch you guys make music with David.
Yeah, I've never heard him play a wrong note yet.
That's a good batting average, I would say.
No kidding. Yeah.
Folks have been really looking forward to that CSN documentary. What's been kind of one of the cool things that's been uncovered for you as the guy that was a part of it that, you know, you've seen as a result of that thing coming together?
It shows how much we love each other. You know, yes, we've argued, you know that, everybody knows that. But we have a deep love for each other, and it shows in this movie. People are really going to understand, you know, the relative importance of the music that we made over the last 60 years.
When it comes to the stuff that you uncovered that's you're looking to put out musically to go with that, that you've been working on with Joel, was there anything that you'd forgotten about? Because you are somebody that has gone so deep as the steward of a lot of the box sets into this stuff. But was there stuff that surprised you that was uncovered as part of those, you know, 33 songs?
Yeah, the 33 songs. You know, we took a title of a song and we listened to every version of that song, and we chose what we consider to be the best version. And it really shows how much we loved each other. You know, on that album that we put out recently about the Fillmore East, and I think it's Helplessly Hoping, you can hear us. Someone do an unexpected note and us start laughing in the middle of the song. We knew we had magic from the very first moment that David and Stephen and I ever sang together in Joni's living room.
So that's what's cool. It sounds like those 33 songs cross a lot of different eras then.
They do. It starts in 1969 and it ends in 97.
Just generally, like, you guys, I know we're working for a period with Rick Rubin. Like, does any of that stuff survive in any form that you would ever want to see come out?
It does survive. I do have all of those songs. It depends. You know, it was very difficult, particularly from David's point of view. You know, we wanted two Beatles songs on there. We wanted Blackbird, of course, and we wanted Norwegian Wood. And Rick told David, no, there'll only be one. And from that moment on, David and Rick were arguing, and it never came to pass.
An album of yours that I was talking about with a friend yesterday was that Crosby Nash double album that came out on Sanctuary in the early 2000s. And, you know, when you talk about Graham, just like the love that all of you had, like, you and David seemed like you were in such a really good songwriting zone in that period. It made me wonder, how prolific was that period? Are there things that we haven't heard from that era that you'd love to get to the surface eventually?
Absolutely. Yeah, don't forget, we did a couple of tours, you know, in the early 70s with you know, Russ Kunkel on drums and Craig Derge on piano and David Lindley on guitar and Danny Kortchmar and sometimes Tim Drummond on bass. There is a beautiful piece of a video of us doing a Love Workout that will eventually be shown to people, and Carry Me, yes.
I think that's been something about even just your solo work, is just all the different people you have, like, been associated with over the years. And what a fascinating character David Lindley must have been to work with.
His death was tragic, you know.
Yeah.
he without question, he's the best musician that I ever worked with. I mean, his solo records with the Ray OX are unbelievable. You know, Mercury Blues is utterly fantastic. David Lindley added to my music. He added to Jackson's music, of course. He was a tremendous, tremendous musician, and he's in my prayers every night.
Well, kind of along those lines, Songs for Beginners is an album that a lot of people still hold very dear, and it still figures, you know, very much in your set list. I wondered, what's a good Jerry Garcia memory you have from the period? You just had so many incredible people, you know, friends and musicians that were in the studio. I think that's, for a lot of us as fans, I think that's a record we would love to be on the fly on the proverbial wall to have experienced what it was like making that record.
What one particular memory was David's cowboy movie that was on, If Only I Could Remember My Name. David liked track 3 because of the vocal, but then with Jerry Garcia playing. But then Neil comes into the studio, and track 4 had Neil playing guitar. And I, in the studio, transferred Neil's guitar to track 3 so that Neil is playing with Jerry Garcia. And I think that's the one we used on David's box set that I put together with Joel.
That's so cool. Yeah, no, that's Cowboy Movie. It's just such an incredible piece of work. And that long kind of friendship you had with David, what did you appreciate about his kind of approach to the craft, you know, from a writing and, you know, the way he sang and just everything?
It was completely open-ended. We totally trusted each other. He would, you know, do us. I mean, there's I think 6 songs on the BBC that we did in the early 70s, acoustic. And there's a song called Song with No Words. And I understood the melody. I understood what I needed to do to add to it. But he trusted me to go anywhere that I wanted. And it's the same with him when we did Lady of the Island on the first record, first CSN record. His coming in the middle with a beautiful, almost cello-like song part was totally I mean, it's the first take.
Last couple things, Graham. And, you know, one of those, I mean, Stills is obviously another unique person in your universe. What do you appreciate about Stephen and what he, you know, brings to music?
Stephen's got it. Whatever it is, Stephen's got it. He's got the groove. He's got the chops. He's got the melodies. He's got the vocals, the way he sings, and particularly the way his right-hand picking pattern is. It's totally unique. I loved Stephen. You know, he was a genius in a certain part of his life.
Well, you mentioned the box sets, and I tell you what, man, I know it was a big, big project to get it to the finish line, but I've always appreciated what you and Joel did with the CSNY 1974 box set. That tour seems like it was complex, but man, there were magic on those tapes, and it's really a gift as fans that we have that.
Yep. I knew that we were better than what was on the web, you know, on the internet. I knew that we were a good rock and roll band, and I wanted to show people just how good we were.
Well, as we think about these tour dates, you and, you know, separately Neil are still out on the road, but you're basically the only one that's really playing the CSN songs a good amount of the time. And I'm sure that's a range of feelings, Graham, being the person who's out there keeping these songs alive. It's both an honor, and it's also kind of poignant.
It is. And don't forget, you know, Neil's never going to do CSN songs. Stephen is never going on the road again. David, unfortunately, you know, has passed away, and if anybody wants to hear any of those songs, they should come and see me. I really loved the music that we made, and now that I have Adam Minkoff, who plays drums and bass at the same time, by the way, on a couple of songs, and electric guitar and acoustic guitar, and Zach Janikian on acoustic guitar, electric guitar, drums, bass, mandolin, and tenor sax. I can do all that.
Well, something I like to ask folks, Bruce Hornsby once told me he was, you know, working to get better at like two-handed independence. What are you still working to get better at creatively in some part of your life?
I'm trying to get better at life itself. I know that I'm 84 now. I know that my life is probably coming to an end soon. I hope to make it to at least 100. I'm trying to do better at life.
That's awesome, man. Well, Graham, thank you for the time. We're looking forward to these shows. And, you know, as always, it's a pleasure to hear your music.
Thank you very much, Matt.
We've reached the end of another episode of the UCR podcast. It is Matt Wardlaw. We appreciate you listening. If you enjoy what you're hearing, please rate and review wherever you are listening and hit subscribe so that you'll receive future episodes of the podcast from Ultimate Classic Rock.